It's not my thing anyway. I love writing songs, plucking at strings, trying to figure out how the words and the notes work together. We're both quiet, lost in our own thoughts, and neither one of us says another word until I'm at the bottom of his steep driveway. The odometer is on 9, so I tell him I want to hear the rest of this song and drive around the block one time. Then I pretend to miss his driveway. When the digits are lined up correctly, I pull up to his garage door and put the car in park. His head falls to one side.
Can I ask you something?
I brace myself for a question about my tendency to overshoot driveways. Of course, I say.
When did you start making this playlist?
Crap. He knows these songs are for him. Or does he? I start to say something flip like, oh, this old thing years ago. But that doesn't seem right. Besides, Caroline told me to let my guard down tonight, and when I did, things turned out pretty well. After I heard you play the first time.
Really?
I feel my face flush. I hope it's too dark out here for him to tell.
Remember when you came to my house that day?
He asks. How could I forget?
After you left, I wrote something for you.
Really? I'm relieved to learn that he's been thinking about me, too, and that what happened tonight wasn't a spur-of-the-moment thing for him, either. Can I hear it? I ask, watching his mouth while I wait for him to reply. I can't help myself. His lips look so soft when he says,
maybe.
But inside, I can feel myself starting to panic. I didn't plan any of this. Tonight has been amazing. Now it's over, and I don't know what comes next. What happens tomorrow? He twists in his seat and kisses me, and I try to focus on how incredible this feels. But my heart's racing fast, and not in the good way it was back at the pool. The thought spiral starts to take control, and I try to ignore it, but it won't let me. He must be able to tell I'm not fully present, because he pulls away slightly and whispers,
"What's the matter?"
Talk to him. I bite the inside of my lower lip 3 times. Then I take a deep breath. What happens tomorrow? His hands are warm on the back of my neck.
What do you want to happen tomorrow?
I want to be alone with you again, exactly like this. I don't know. Tonight has been so unexpected. Perfect, but unexpected.
And you don't want to tell your friends about me?
They wouldn't understand. It's not that, I'm not sure I'm ready to share whatever this is.
Whatever this is?
He says, laughing under his breath. He pulls me toward him.
Do you want this?
He asks in his candid way.
Whatever it is?
So much. Yeah.
So do I.
He kisses me slowly, softly, and I slip right back into him, wishing I could slow down time and savor this moment a little bit longer.
Then let's keep it to ourselves for a little while, he says, until we figure it out.
It's like the knot in my chest is unraveling, and now it's a lot easier to breathe. Okay, I whisper.
Besides, he says, it might be kind of fun to have a secret.
Can I handle another secret? I'm already keeping Caroline from the crazy eights, my OCD from everyone but Caroline, and Poet's Corner from Shrink Sue. Sue. I can't keep him a secret from Sue. I'm going to have to tell her about AJ and me, and what happened at the pool tonight. But she'd see this as healthy, right? I slip my fingers under the hem of his t-shirt and touch his skin. He sure doesn't feel unhealthy. The song changes to one of my favorites, Led Zeppelin's classic Brongniart, and AJ lets out a sigh as he turns up the volume.
Wow, you know this?
His fingers brush against my waist and he hums along with the tune.
I haven't thought about this song in ages. I'll have to learn to play it for you.
I'm not in any hurry to see his ex-girlfriend filled bedroom, but I am eager to hear him again. I'd cross the room and kiss him while he played, for real this time. He grabs his swimsuit from the back seat.
Thanks for showing me where you write.
Thanks for not laughing at my poem.
I'd never laugh at you, he says. Well, not unless he said something funny.
He kisses me, and then he opens the door and steps out of the car.
Good night, Sam.
Good night, AJ. He gives me a wave before he disappears inside the house, and I sit there for a moment collecting myself. Then I reach for my phone, set Brongniart on repeat, and listen to it all the way home, imagining him sitting on his bed playing for me. Your best friends. I'm scanning the corridors for AJ while trying not to look like I'm scanning the corridors for anyone. I'm also trying to keep a straight face, but when I think about what happened at the pool last night, I just can't. AJ's lips were as soft as I thought they'd be, and they were so warm, so wet from the water, and the way his hands moved so fluidly over my body. No one has ever touched me like that before, and I have no idea how I'm going to get through this day. And he likes me. Too much. How am I supposed to keep him a secret? I swear if I turn this corner and see him standing at my locker, I'm going to press my whole body against his and kiss him hard before he even knows what's happening. I turn the corner and my stomach drops instead. He's not there, but the aides are, each one demonstrating her dissatisfaction in her own unique way. A hip popped to one side, a head cocked knowingly, an eyebrow raised. Haley's posture is less confrontational, but the nervous look on her face makes me question if she knows which side she's on. Hey, what's up? My voice cracks. We need to talk to you. As soon as the words leave Alexis's mouth, the adrenaline kicks in. My armpits already feel sweaty, and my fingers are tingling. As usual, she has taken the role of group representative, the one who will start the conversation. Where have you been? She asks. I look around me. Home? The parking lot? What are you talking about? Not today. It comes out in a huff, and she doesn't add the word idiot, but she says it with her eyes. She rests her hands on her hips and takes a deep breath. Samantha, we need to talk to you about the way you've been lying to us. I start to interject, but she puts her finger to her lips. Don't say anything until I'm done, please. You've been lying to us. We just want to know why. Because we... She waves her hands around, indicating the rest of the group. Are your best friends. At least we thought we were. This might be a new record. We're barely 24 hours away from itty-bitty titty gate, and it's already a distant memory. They've found a reason to move on. To me. My hands are shaking, my pulse is racing, and a big part of me wants to take off running right now, bound for the theater or some other dark location where I can sit and breathe and think and prepare for this. I'm no good in an ambush. Alexis looks over at Caitlin. This is the point at which they've agreed to pass the baton to the next person. It's the biggest job, the one with all the heavy lifting. You told us you were going to start swimming during lunch, but we know you haven't been. Your hair is never wet when you get to fifth period, Olivia interjects. I wear a cap, I say under my breath. We've tried to find you at the pool, Haley adds. You haven't been there. I look at her. This would have been good information to know yesterday. I have a feeling she knew this was coming, and I feel even more betrayed. I stuck up for her. So you've been spying on me? I ask them. No, Caitlin says plainly. Yes, I say. Alexis steps forward. Fine, we were spying on you, but you lied to us, and that's so much worse. Her voice pierces the air. Everyone within earshot has stopped collecting their books from their respective lockers, and they're all frozen in place, watching the drama unfold, waiting to see what's going to happen next. Over Olivia's shoulder, I spot Caroline, watching the scene from behind her locker door, and I can read the expression on her face. She's worried I'll tell them about Poet's Corner.
I give her the slightest nod and hope she knows what it means. I have this under control.
Friends don't lie to each other, Samantha, Caitlin says. Not ever.
No, never. Not even when they don't like the outfit you're wearing or your new haircut or the new song you like or the guy you think is cute. My friends, especially Caitlin, don't lie to each other, not ever. Even when it's a kindness designed to spare someone's feelings.
We're giving you a chance to come clean, Olivia says. Where have you been going during lunch?
I start to panic, but instead I think about my conversation with Shrink Sue last week, when I told her I care a lot less about what my friends think of me these days. I try to reconnect with the part of me that said and truly meant those words. I blow out a breath and lift my shoulders, standing a little taller. Honestly, I say, and they all unconsciously lean in, step forward, move closer toward me. It's personal.
Personal? Alexis asks. What the hell does that mean?
It means it's none of your business, Alexis. My voice is clear, my words direct, and my hands are already shaking less. Their eyes say everything they're feeling. Confused, shocked, humbled, hurt. This sucks. And it feels good at the same time. I square my shoulders and step toward my locker. Alexis and Haley part to let me through.
Seriously? You're not going to tell us?
Alexis asks, and I can hear the surprise in her voice. This scenario never occurred to her.
No, I'm not,
I say, spinning the combination lock, lifting the latch, gathering my books. Using the opportunity to take a few deep breaths and get my legs to stop trembling. The bell rings. Thank God. I sneak another glance over Olivia's shoulder. Caroline is still watching us, but the expression on her face is now filled with relief. She might even look a little proud of me. I glance around at the eights, wishing they'd leave so I could talk to her, but everyone seems to be in a state of shock. The picture on the inside of my locker door catches my eye. My gaze travels past the pink post-it that reads, "What you see," and over to the small mirror. I notice that the two expressions are nearly identical. Confidence. That was the word I used when I told Shrink Sue what I liked about the photo. It's how I felt at the pool with AJ last night. It's how I feel during lunch on Mondays and Thursdays. I look at that strong, determined expression on my face. I remember exactly what I was thinking when Sue asked me about it. Swim scholarship. A chance to go far away to college. A chance to reinvent myself. And that's when I realize that as much as I want the scholarship, I don't need to go away to reinvent myself. I've already been doing that. I turn to face them. I'm doing some different things during lunch now, but when I'm not, I'd still like to sit with you guys. Is that okay?
Of course, Haley says right away.
No one else says a word until she turns her head and raises her eyebrows at Alexis.
Yeah, Alexis says. Of course that's okay. Why wouldn't it be?
Cool. I close my locker door. I'll see you later. As I pass Caroline, I motion toward the path that leads to the theater. She follows me, and as soon as we duck into a quiet alcove, she gives me a high five.
Nicely done. How do you feel? She asks.
Amazing. But that's only part of the reason why. I scan our surroundings to be sure we're still alone.
Can you keep a secret? I ask her.
She rolls her eyes.
Of course I can.
And I tell her all about AJ and our non-date. Write about me. I've positioned myself in line so I'll be the last one through the door. When I pass AJ, I feel his fingers brush against my waist, and I slow down so they can linger a moment longer. I want to kiss him right now, right here, right in front of all the other poets. We've been keeping whatever this is under wraps for 2 weeks now, and I'm not sure I can handle it much longer.
It's all I can do to walk away from him.
Are you reading today? Sydney asks as we head toward the couches.
No, I can't read. All my poems are about AJ now. They'd know immediately.
You?
She waves an Auntie Anne's pretzel wrapper in the air, then takes it with both hands and snaps it taut.
You should prepare yourself, my friend, because I am about to wax poetic on the many virtues of cinnamon, sugar, and butter on warm dough.
This? She snaps the paper again. I can see her handwriting scrawled on it.
This may be my finest work yet.
Sydney sits in her usual chair. Abigail's already taken the seat next to Jessica. Caroline's not here yet, but I see an open spot next to Emily, and I decide to sit with her today instead. She and AJ are friends, and eventually, when the two of us aren't a secret anymore, it would be nice to know her better. She scoots over to make a little more room for me, but she doesn't make eye contact. Before we start, I take a moment to scan the room and take it all in like I always do. I feel safe here now, not overwhelmed or unworthy, and the familiarity feels comforting. Still, Poet's Corner feels magical. I hope it always does. I have 9 poems on these walls. 9. Cameron's on stage alone. I've never seen him up there without Jessica and Abigail. He adjusts his glasses and opens a piece of paper.
I wrote this in my room last night,
he says, and then he reads a poem that's heartbreaking and angry, and it takes me completely by surprise. I hold my breath as he reads the last line, wondering what's ripping him apart from the inside out. His face is bright red as he slaps his poem hard against the wall. Is he okay? I whisper to Emily. She leans in close and tells me that his parents are getting divorced. He hasn't talked about it in a while. Jessica and Abigail have been trying to take his mind off it with the Raven. I had no idea. He's always so on, one of those people who seems to have his life together at all times. Now I have a lump in my throat. I thought I knew him better than this, but I realize I don't really know anything about him at all. I make a mental note to go read his poem now that I have proper context. Maybe it'll help me figure out the right thing to say to him as we're leaving today.
Who's next?
AJ asks from his usual spot. We all look around. Sydney's directly across from me, and I see her start to stand. Her timing's good. After that, we could use some comic relief. But then I hear Emily say, I'll go, from my other side. She steps up onto the stage, and I realize how different she looks today. She didn't even try to cover up the thick, dark circles under her bloodshot eyes, and if she brushed her hair this morning, she got caught in an especially strong wind between then and now. I've had a really tough week, she says, her voice cracking on the last word. My stomach knots up. This is called On My Way to You, she says. I wrote it last night in my mom's hospital room. I'm pretty sure we're all wondering how she's going to get through a whole poem, but she takes a deep breath, sits straight up on the stool, and launches in, voice steady and strong. I drag my feet on my way to you, way over there, too far away. Skin, thin, practically translucent. Eyes, sunken, skeletal. Bruised. Tubes, colorless and everywhere. You. Not you. Gone. Not gone. Not yet. Hand warm, slack, but still familiar. So familiar. I shouldn't have dragged my feet. I look back at Caroline. She has her palms pressed into the couch cushions and her gaze fixed on the floor. Sydney has her hand over her mouth. Tears are flooding down Emily's face when Jessica hurries up to the stage. She hugs her hard, then looks right into her eyes and says something the rest of us can't hear. She hands her a glue stick, and Emily finds a spot on the wall for her poem. The room is quiet for a long time after that. Across the aisle, I can see Sydney playing with her Auntie Anne's wrapper, folding and unfolding it, before she finally shoves it under her leg. "Okay, someone please go," Emily says. No one moves or says a word. "I already saw the wrapper in your hand, Sid." Sydney shifts in her seat, looking around, assessing the tone of the room, trying to figure out what to do. We make eye contact. "You should read," I mouth, and she makes a face like she's not sure. I gesture toward the stage and mouth, "Read," again. Sydney walks to the front. Once she's settled on the stool, she looks out into the crowd. "This is dedicated to my friend Emily, who, I bet, has never enjoyed the sweet, sweet goodness of Auntie Anne's." Emily is still dabbing her eyes, but now she's shaking her head and laughing, too. "I call this one Pretzel Logic, and I'm sure it won't surprise you that I wrote it," she snaps the bag taut again, "at my favorite aunt's house. At Auntie Anne's, I always ask for soft, sugary, slippery, sweet pretzels. Perfectly prepped and pinched, rolled into rings and ribbons, twisted into tantalizing tastes that tease my tongue, and deliciously, delightfully destroy my diet." Sydney pulls her skirt to one side, curtsying while everyone claps and whistles. She looks directly at Emily. "Better, darling?" "Much. I'll bring you a cup of cinnamon sugar nuggets tomorrow. Crappy mall food cures everything." I cringe at the word everything, because I'm quite certain nothing they sell at the mall cures cancer. But Emily blows Sydney a dramatic kiss, making it clear she wasn't offended by her choice of words. Sydney runs the glue stick along the back of the wrapper and steps off the stage. She hands it to Emily. "Will you find a home for this piece of alliterative genius, please?" Emily's smiling as she sticks the poem to the wall next to the one she just read about her mom. Sydney sits next to me. "Was that okay?" "It was perfect," I tell her. "And yes, your finest work yet." "Thanks, I thought so too." The sound of a guitar pulls my attention back to the stage. I'm still trying to get my bearings after Emily's poem, but AJ's there now, perched on the stool with his guitar slung over his shoulder in that confident musician way that makes me feel lightheaded. He's plucking at the strings, just like he did in his room on that day, but the tune doesn't sound familiar.
"I haven't written anything new in a few weeks," he says. "I don't know why. I guess I haven't felt like it."
My heart's already been through enough today, but his words make it sink even deeper into my chest. My yellow notebook is almost full because of him. He's all I think about, all I write about. Doesn't he want to write about me?
"A few weeks ago, a friend of mine reminded me about this song," he says, his music still floating around the room. "I've always loved it, but I didn't know how to play it, so I decided to learn. And it's felt like a bit of an escape, I guess. Like a vacation."
The strings he plays begin to morph into something new, and slowly I start to recognize the first notes of Brongniart. I wrap my fingers around the edge of the cushion and squeeze.
"You guys know I love words, but this song reminded me that sometimes they're not necessary."
He settles back against the stool and plucks those notes again, but this time he keeps going, playing the next ones. His eyelids are lightly closed, his head moving gently up and down with the rhythm. Then he opens his eyes, and his gaze settles on me. And like the song, he doesn't need any words, because that look on his face speaks volumes. "This song is for me." He gives me the smallest smile and turns away before anyone notices. When he plays the last note, we all stand, clapping and cheering as he throws his guitar over his shoulder in that sexy way he does and pulls a scrap of paper out of his pocket.
"I wrote out the music," he says.
Even his musical notes have that signature AJ slant to them. He steps off stage and heads straight for Emily. He holds her face in his hands and says something I can't hear, and then she points at a sliver of empty wall space on the other side of the poem she read today. "Right there," she says. I can't stop watching him. He's so kind to her. And Emily's looking at him with such gratitude. AJ slaps his song on the wall. Then he pulls Emily into a hug, and she clings to him like she can't let go. I can hear her crying, working hard to catch her breath. AJ tightens his hold on her. Then Abigail stands up and wraps her arms around the two of them. Jessica joins, and so do Cameron and Chelsea. Sydney grabs my hand and we step into the circle. Caroline's on my other side, one hand on Chelsea's back and the other on Jessica's. Without thinking about it, I'm moving toward Cameron and tightening my grip on Sydney. Tears are rolling down my cheeks because my heart is breaking for a girl I didn't even know 3 months ago. I glance over at Caroline. She smiles wide and mouths, "Told you." This is good. We're sitting on my living room rug doing homework at the coffee table when AJ scoots closer, runs his hand around my back and starts kissing my neck.
"Sam,"
he murmurs. "Yeah?"
"I think we should tell people."
That's when I realize this isn't the beginning of the typical post-homework making out on my living room rug we've been doing nearly every day for the last 2 weeks. I don't know how to respond, so I kiss him, but my mind's off somewhere else, caught up in a thought spiral that's a lot like the guilty one I have about Caroline, but worse. AJ isn't like the guys the eights go out with. He's not popular. He's not his brother, deemed acceptable even though he's a year younger, because he's not an athlete in any way. He doesn't dress like our clean-cut jock friends, especially when he wears that ski hat, which I admit I find kind of sexy. He walks around campus with his head down, avoiding interaction, and he eats lunch with two people who appear to be his only friends, Cameron and Emily. Of course, none of this is the real AJ, but that's the AJ they'll see. He reaches over, grabs me by the waist, and pulls me onto his lap so I'm straddling his hips, and I wrap my arms around his shoulders and bury my fingers in his hair. I look at him, seeing him the way I do, slightly scruffy but beautiful, inside and out.
"There's a reason I think we should start telling people," he says.
"Oh?" I ask curiously.
"Devon called me last night."
"Oh," I say, already panicking. She knows I've been researching her. Okay, stalking her. "Did she call for any particular reason?" I ask, hoping I don't sound jealous or worse, freaked out. Caroline's baseball trick works a lot of the time, but I'm still checking on Devon. A lot. And I want to stop, but I can't, because telling someone with OCD to stop obsessing about something is like telling someone who's having an asthma attack to just breathe normally. My mind needs more information. The rabbit hole still hasn't come to an end.
"No, she called to say hi, to see how I'm doing."
"Breathe. She called to say hi. And you told her about us?"
"No, but I wanted to. I think I should."
"Breathe. He wanted to tell his ex-girlfriend about us."
"I'd want her to tell me if she had a serious boyfriend."
"Serious." I bring my hand to the back of my neck and dig my fingernail in 3 times, but I don't know why I'm upset. This is good.
"What's the matter?"
AJ asks. "Nothing."
"Yes, there is, I can tell. Your forehead gets all crunched up when you're thinking too hard."
He kisses my forehead, and I feel the muscles relax under his touch. 1. Breathe. 2. Breathe. 3. Breathe. I know what I need. Information about the two of them. Information I can't find on my own. "I need to ask you something," I say, interlacing my fingers behind his head, forcing them to stay still and not scratch against anything. I look right into his eyes. "You loved her. Last time I checked, you weren't sure if you still did." I bite the inside of my lower lip 3 times and hope he doesn't notice.
"I did love her," he says, "but I don't anymore. Not like that. I mean, I still care about her, but..."
He's fumbling through this, but he sounds sincere.
Trust me, you don't have any reason to be jealous, Sam.
Not jealous, just obsessed. I start to correct him, but then it occurs to me that I'm better off leaving this where it is.
Seriously, I don't know how to explain it,
he says, but this... He wraps his hands around my waist and kisses me, pulling me closer to him.
This is different.
The thoughts are already losing some of their power. Maybe with a little more information I can kill them completely. How is this different? I ask.
I never told Devon about Poet's Corner. She never met any of my friends, not even Cameron. She knew I played guitar, but I never showed her my songs or anything.
He laughs under his breath.
The day you were in my room and I handed you my clipboard, it kind of surprised me. I've never done that before.
Really?
Really. We're just different, Sam. In every way that matters.
We. He doesn't say we're better. He doesn't say he loves me more than he loved her. And that's okay. He doesn't need to. Because now his fingers are in my hair and his mouth is on mine. And my thoughts are all about him and this different thing we have. And my toxic Devon thoughts are scattering away in all directions. They might return, but I no longer feel the impulse to check on her. The rabbit hole has come to an end, at least for now, and I've landed in Wonderland, a peaceful place where my mind can finally relax and quit pleading for information.
Thank you, I whisper. Not necessarily to him, but of course that's how it comes out.
You're welcome,
he says, kissing me with even more intensity. I feel his hands travel underneath the back of my shirt, his fingers pressed into my skin, inching my hips toward him. You should stay for dinner, I say, pulling my hands away and attempting to change the subject. Paige keeps asking about you.
Will your mom mind?
Only if she walks in and catches us like this.
I'll take my chances.
He takes both of my wrists, guiding them around the back of his neck, positioning my arms right where they were. Then he kisses me again, moving slowly from my lips to my cheek, to that spot right behind my ear that he knows I can't resist. And when I'm sure he can't see me, I bring one hand to my jeans and scratch my leg 3 times. I think we should tell people, I say. The 10th thing. Hey, Colleen, happy Wednesday, I say, closing the door to Sue's office behind me. Even from where she sits behind her desk, I can tell Colleen's taken aback, like we're actors in a play and I just went off script. For the last 5 years, she's had the first line. Hi, Sam. She stands eyeing me suspiciously. Water? No, thanks. I rest my elbows on the counter and she stares at me, a smile teasing the corners of her mouth. Then go on in, she's ready for you. I feel a bounce in my step as I walk down the hallway toward Sue's office. I've been eagerly awaiting our session, and I can't wait to see the expression on her face when I tell her what I've decided to do. Hi, Sam. Hey. I kick off my shoes and sit down, folding my legs underneath me. Sue hands me my thinking putty, but I just hold it with one hand and squeeze a few times. I'm not sure I need it today. I'm light, not fidgety. Excited, not nervous. The whole thing feels a little strange. Sue stares at me for a good 30 seconds before she says anything. Well, you certainly look happy today. I take it you're having a good week? I nod, but good doesn't really capture it. Ever since the lying-slash-spying incident a couple of weeks ago, the 8s have been especially nice to me. Alexis keeps complimenting me on my outfits, and she seems to actually mean it. Last week, Caitlin asked me if I wanted to co-chair the junior prom committee with her, and I think she was genuinely happy when I said yes. And when Olivia's dad got last-minute VIP tickets to a Metric concert, she invited me to join them. Caroline came over to my house after school yesterday, and we sat in the backyard working on a new poem. It was about opening your mind, lowering your walls, and finding friendship where you least expect it. I've been trying to write it on my own for weeks now,
but I couldn't seem to find the right words.
As usual, Caroline knew exactly how to make it better.
And then there's AJ. I was terrified when he suggested telling people about us, but if I don't think about the glass-half-empty parts, like the Crazy Eight's reaction or making things weird with the poets, and concentrate on the positive elements, like the two of us walking to class holding hands and kissing whenever we want to, it makes me giddy.
When I fill Shrink Sue in on everything, she says,
"Well, no wonder you're in a good mood."
She closes her leather portfolio and leans forward, resting her elbows on her knees, giving me her full attention. I can't read her expression, but she's waiting and listening, urging me to keep talking without saying a word.
"I've been thinking about our conversation a few sessions ago," I say, forming my putty into a cube. "I told you I didn't care what the Eights think, but that's not entirely true. I do care. AJ and Caroline and the rest of my new friends shouldn't be a secret. It doesn't feel right.
I like the sound of that."
Sue's smile is huge and warm and contagious. She looks so proud of me right now. And I should feel proud of myself, but there's something below the surface that's nagging me, and I can't pinpoint it.
"Why are you scratching?" Sue asks.
I pull my fingernails away from the back of my neck and stab them into my putty instead.
"I'm nervous."
"What are you most afraid about?"
"It's a good question. I'm not afraid of the Eights kicking me out of the group, although it's entirely possible they will. And I'm not afraid of them coming after Caroline or AJ anymore. I wouldn't let that happen."
I look at her. They're not going to understand what I see in him.
God, that sounds so shallow and horrible.
"Tell me what you see in him."
"I've told you," I say, shifting to pull my legs to my chest and resting my chin on my knees.
"He's wonderful."
"What's so wonderful about him?"
She's not going to let this drop. I shake my head and look past her, out the window, watching a tree limb whipping around in the wind.
"I don't know. I can't explain it."
I stretch out my putty and say the first thing that pops into my head.
"He plays guitar and, well, that's just hot."
I hide my face behind my hands so she can't see my pink cheeks.
"I'm sure it's extremely hot, but I was sort of hoping for something less superficial."
"Fine." I stop fidgeting and give her my undivided attention. "I'll give you 10 non-superficial reasons." I hold my thumb in the air and begin counting. "He writes thoughtful, funny, inspiring words. When he picks up his guitar, my heart starts racing before he even touches a string. People pay attention to him when he talks. He's humble. He kisses really well. He thinks my man shoulders are sexy."
I stop, waiting for a reaction to those last two, but Sue's still in the same position, wearing the same expression. I hold up a seventh finger.
"He's kind to people, especially his friends. When he talks about his family, you can tell that he genuinely likes them. He can't swim, at all."
I laugh, picturing that hybrid dog paddle thing he did that night I took him to the pool. Then I blush, remembering how he kissed me in the water that night, how I wrapped my legs around his waist in the deep end, both of us closed but kind of acting like we weren't.
"That's 9, Sue says. I drop my feet to the floor and sit up again. "When I'm with him, Sue, I don't feel sick or labeled or broken. I feel normal. He makes me feel totally and completely normal."
She leans forward. "Does he know about your OCD, Sam?"
I stare at her. "Didn't she hear what I said? Didn't she hear the 10th thing?"
"Of course not. The second he finds out, I cease to be normal. He makes me feel normal because he thinks I am normal."
Sue doesn't seem to know what to say to that. She crosses her legs and sits back in her chair. "If he's all those wonderful things you said about him, he'd understand, wouldn't he?"
"I'm sure he would, but that's not the point."
I think about that day we stood in his living room and he said, "Everyone's got something. Some people are just better actors than others." I came so close to telling him my something, but I chickened out. If I told him back then and it scared him away, that would be one thing. But now there's too much at stake. I can't lose him. You once told me that my OCD was made worse by the people I chose to have in my life. You've wanted me to distance myself from the AIDS, to find new, less toxic friends. And I have. We can be the Poetic Nine or some other stupid moniker. I don't care. I like them. I like who I am when I'm with them. I'm getting better at saying what I think. I'm not as afraid of my thoughts, maybe because I'm not holding on to them so tightly anymore. I feel like my mind is under control now, like I'm better. What does that mean to you, Sam, to be better? Sane. Healthy. Not sick. Not crazy. Someone normal. Someone who doesn't need medication to sleep or keep her thoughts under control. Someone who doesn't need you. I clap my hand over my mouth, but it's too late. I'm so sorry, I say into my palm. You have nothing to be sorry about. Sue's expression barely changes, but she's quiet for a long time. What have I done? Have I ever told you about Anthony? She finally asks. I shake my head. He was a patient of mine many years ago. He had synesthesia. It's a disorder where, in essence, your five senses have their wires crossed. In this case, Anthony could hear in color. I'll trade him, I say. That sounds really cool. It wasn't to him. It affected his daily life. He had a hard time concentrating at work, especially in meetings where there were multiple people speaking at the same time. He couldn't tolerate crowds. He felt like his brain was on overload, constantly receiving stimuli. It was physically draining. We worked together for a long time, and after a while his perspective started to change. He began to realize no one else heard music quite the way he did. No one else knew that his wife's voice was this really unique shade of purple. Normal people couldn't see the color of laughter, and he began to feel sorry for them, because they'd never get to experience the world the way he did. I think that's a lovely way to look at special minds. I roll my eyes. Really, Sue? Special? Very. Your brain works differently, Sam. Sometimes it does things that scare you, but it's very special, and so are you. Thank you. I smile at her. It's a kind thing to say, but I know where she's going here. You're sharing this story to make me tell AJ, aren't you? I'm not making you do anything. Whether or not you tell him is entirely up to you. I'm merely reminding you to embrace who you are and surround yourself with people who do the same. Okay. And you know what's totally normal? She asks. To feel the way you're feeling right now. It's okay to want a life without medication and a life without me. I'm sorry I said that. Don't be. I'm incredibly proud of you, Sam. You're doing great. I am, and it feels good. But I'm still not about to tell AJ my secret. This one boy. The next night, my phone chirps as I'm sprawled across my bed doing my French homework. I pick it up and check the screen. PC. PC? As in Poet's Corner? It's 7:45 on a Thursday night. That can't be right. I check the recipients of the group message and see the long list of phone numbers. I wait for someone else to reply, but no one does. So I type, "Is this a mistake?" I press send, and AJ responds right away. "No." My pulse is racing as I leap off my bed and slip out of my sweats and into a fresh pair of jeans and a clean sweater. It's freezing outside, so I throw my swim parka over my arm. I grab my swim bag off the floor and my car keys off my desk. Mom, Dad, and Paige are sitting together on the couch, watching a movie. "I'm going to go swim some laps," I announce, feeding my arms through my jacket and hoping I look convincing. "This late?" Dad asks, and before I can say anything, Mom chimes in and says, She always swims this late. She waves me off. Have fun.
I'm feeling a little guilty as I put the car in reverse and back out of the driveway, and a lot guilty as I drive past the street that leads to the pool. But guilt turns to nervousness as I pull into the student lot. I drive to a spot that allows me to park with the odometer on 3.
AJ's waiting for me inside the gate. He spreads his arms wide.
Welcome to your first PM.
Do I even want to know what a PM is? I don't like this. I'm not good with surprises.
Every once in a while we meet at night, just to shake things up. They're fun, you'll see.
He checks the surroundings to be sure we're alone, and then he reaches out and grabs the zipper on my swim parka. He gives it a tug, pulling me toward him.
You look gorgeous, by the way.
I laugh in his face. That's not possible. I was doing homework and I rushed out the door. I didn't even put any makeup on.
Like I said.
He slowly unzips my parka down to my waist and slips his arms inside and around my back, pulling me closer, pressing his body against mine.
Gorgeous,
he whispers. He tips his head down and kisses me, and my lips part for him like they always do. I'll never get enough of this. I'll never get tired of kissing him. I want to stay out here, alone with him for the next hour or two, but I know everyone's inside. And besides, it's freezing. He slides his arms away, zips my jacket up to my chin, and kisses my nose. That's mean, I say. How am I supposed to keep my hands off you now?
You don't have to. We could tell them tonight.
I think about my conversation with Sue yesterday. We could. I want to. But I've been mentally preparing to tell the aides first. I haven't even thought about how to tell everyone downstairs.
Never mind, he says before I can respond.
He kisses my forehead.
We'll tell them later.
He drops the subject and picks up my hand instead, leading me to the theater door. I'm surprised it's unlocked, and I give him a questioning look.
I texted Mr. B and asked him to leave it open tonight.
He drops my hand before we step into the dark theater. I can see them up on stage, all huddled together under the dim lighting, and I do a quick count of the shadows. 7. Everyone's here. For some reason, we're all keeping silent, sneaking as quietly as we can through the door and down the stairs. It's strange to be in the theater at night, but it really shouldn't feel that different. These hallways are always dark and dimly lit, even in broad daylight. When AJ unbolts the door, everyone slips inside and heads straight for the lamps, flipping them on until they light up our paper walls. I sit on one of the couches at the back of the room, and Caroline settles in next to me. I'm nervous, I whisper when I'm sure no one's paying attention. This is weird. She spreads her arms across the back of the sofa, and when her flannel falls open, I can read her t-shirt. Consider this DM carped. Stop worrying, this is a good thing. Don't twist it into something else, she warns. AJ and Sydney both step onto the stage at the same time. When he looks at her sideways, as if he's wondering what she's doing up there, she bumps his hip with hers. Before we get started, I have an announcement to make. She waves a thin stack of papers in the air. There's an open mic night at this small club in the city tomorrow. All ages. Anyone's invited to read. Or sing, she says, looking pointedly at AJ, and then back at the group. She gives the flyers to Emily, who starts passing them around. Larger stage than this, Sydney says, tapping her foot against the bare wood, and far less comfortable seating. AJ blows a kiss at his couch. But we hope the room will be equally friendly. Who's we? Emily asks. So far, Abigail, Cameron, Jessica, and me. The three of them are doing the Raven, and now they're up to 9 stanzas, so you won't want to miss it. And I'll be reading something especially tasty, of course. Sydney folds the flyer in half and fans herself. Then she gets serious again. Look, none of us have ever read outside this room, and we're all fairly terrified, so come cheer us on, please. Then she looks right at AJ. If you think you might perform and need something like, say, a guitar, you should bring that along. She steps off the stage.
I'm going to pass, he says, but I'll be there in the front row cheering for you guys.
AJ plants himself on the stool, resting one foot on a rung and the other on the floor. It reminds me of the day we were down here together, when he told me all about the rules of Poet's Corner, and then left me alone to read its walls. He's only wearing jeans and a t-shirt, but he's so adorable right now. I want to leap up there and plant kisses all over his face. That'd be one way to tell the rest of them, I guess.
Okay, take out your notebooks or whatever you write in, AJ says.
Sydney holds a jumbo-sized plastic bag of wrappers and napkins in the air. I had no idea she had so many poems. It's hard to believe she can zip that thing closed.
Ideally, everyone should read tonight. But if you don't want to, that's okay, he continues.
Caroline crosses her legs at the ankle and reclines into the couch like she's settling in for the night. You're not reading? She shakes her head. Why not? I whisper, and she makes a face. I should force you up on that stage like you forced me.
Pfft, I'd like to see you try. Since Sam's new, I'll explain how it works, AJ says. One of the other members will join you on stage and randomly pick one of your poems. You read it to the group. If you don't want to read it, ask for another one or just pass. It's not a requirement to read or anything, but this is a long-standing tradition. Started by the original founders of Poet's Corner.
He shrugs.
As far as I can tell, it's some twisted trust exercise designed to humiliate us in front of each other.
Everyone laughs. AJ looks at me.
Be glad you didn't find us sooner, Sam. If you'd heard the ridiculous song I had to play last time, you wouldn't have stuck around.
That's impossible.
Okay, who's up first?
He jumps off stage.
Cameron, you read. Abigail, you choose.
I reach for my yellow notebook. The blue poems are my favorites, but the yellow ones are the safest. Cameron hands Abigail a 3-ring binder, and she picks the page from the back. As it turns out, this poem isn't about his parents' divorce. It's about a girl. He's reading so quietly we all have to strain to hear him, but as he describes her long black hair, I think I understand why. I'm pretty sure this poem is about Jessica. They have been working on the Raven together. Maybe AJ and I aren't the only secret down here. Cameron's face is still bright red as he picks a poem for Abigail. She takes one look at his pick and lets out a whoop. Yes, easy! She launches in, reading a totally innocuous little rhyme about the sunset. Lucky. Abigail picks for Emily. She doesn't show any emotion when she sees what she has to read. And for the first few lines, she manages to keep it together, through a poem that's basically about all the things her mom might not be around to see. But after she reads a verse about our high school graduation, she stops. I'm sorry, she says. I can't do this tonight. Who's next? In a matter of seconds, Jessica is bounding up onto the stage. Long black braids trailing behind her like ribbons on a kite, just like Cameron described them. She hands Emily a bright purple book with a black rubber band around it, and Emily picks a page and hurries back to her seat. Jessica reads a short piece about her math teacher's horrible breath and gives us a much-needed mood change. Chelsea reads next. We're nearing the end of the line, and I'm starting to get nervous about my turn. I can feel myself tuning out the voices on the stage and giving the ones in my head far more attention than they deserve. They could pick anything. I have no control. The voices are getting louder, closing in, and my palms are starting to sweat. I need to go. I need to get it over with. But when Chelsea finishes, she immediately points at Sydney, calling her up to the stage. At least it's Sydney. Chelsea reaches into the plastic bag and pulls out a piece of pink cardboard. She starts to hand it to her, but Sydney won't take it. Nope, pick another one, please. Sid, another one, please. Sydney can't stand still. I've never seen her flustered. Read it to yourself, she says, But then pick again, please. That Taco Bell one is really funny.
Chelsea is quiet as she reads it. Then she leans over and whispers in Sydney's ear. Sydney considers her for a long time before she finally steps off the stage and collapses into the couch. Chelsea holds the piece of pink cardboard in both hands.
I've been granted permission to read this lovely poem, Chelsea says. It's untitled. And I'm going to go out on a limb here and say it was penned in a donut shop.
Sydney's face is buried in the couch cushions in front of her, but she nods dramatically.
I'm not allowed to want you, and you're not allowed to want me. So I'll just wait here patiently, hoping you'll break the rules.
Whoa. I'm dying to know who she's referring to. Someone older? A teacher?
Everyone's clapping and looking over at Sydney, but she's face down on the couch now, underneath one of the throw pillows.
Someone go next, she yells, quickly.
I'll go, I say, and I step up on the stage, handing Chelsea my yellow notebook as I perch myself on the stool. She feeds her finger into a random page near the back and hands it to me. I read the first few lines to myself. This is bad. I read the whole thing through in my head 2 more times. There's a whole lot of crazy in here, but Caroline is probably the only one who will really understand it anyway. After all, I wrote it for her.
This is untitled, and I don't know, it's totally random. I stop short of saying it sucks because I don't feel like being pelted with paper tonight. I wrote it in my room after I said goodbye to a friend of mine. I find Caroline in the crowd and smile at her.
I like it when you're here. Everything is quiet, peaceful. So silent I almost feel sane. You take my mind off my mind. Stay. Just 1 more page. Please?
Caroline stands and starts clapping hard and cheering way too loudly and looking so proud of me I want to burst. I take a bow, feeling a little proud of myself too. I did it. Now they kind of, sort of know about the crazy.
Suddenly, AJ's on the stage next to me, handing me his clipboard, and if he's weirded out by my poem, he's doing a great job hiding it. While he swings his guitar over his shoulder and adjusts it in place, I thumb through his songs and grab hold of a page near the top. I pull it from the stack and hand it to him.
You can sit, he says with a cocky grin. I'll play this no matter what it is.
I step off the stage, taking his clipboard with me. He's already plucking at strings, so I sit down on his orange couch instead of returning to my spot next to Caroline.
Shit,
he says, getting his first look at the song he committed to sing. Then he looks right at me. His cheeks are crimson and he's fidgeting with the paper. I've never seen him so uncomfortable, not in Poet's Corner at least. I watch him, growing even more confused when he removes his guitar and returns it to the stand. He walks right to the front of the stage, past the stool he always sits on when he plays, and roots his feet in place.
This isn't a song. It's a poem.
He jumps up and down a few times, shaking his arms out by his sides.
How do you guys do this? I feel totally naked up here without my guitar.
We all laugh as he shuffles into position, feet rooted again, and blows out a loud breath.
Okay, here we go.
He looks right at me.
This is called Wondering. I wrote this in my room a while ago.
His eyes never leave mine.
After you left, I stared at the driveway, feeling its emptiness, wondering if you'd return. After you left, I thought about your questions. Wishing I hadn't been so blunt, wondering if I scared you away. After you left, I remembered how you felt in my arms, how you fit so perfectly there, like my guitar, wondering if I should have kissed you when I had the chance. After you left, I sat in my room, remembering all the things you said, and wondering about all the things you didn't. After you left, I sat in silence, missing you in a way I didn't quite understand, wondering if you'd ever come back.
He drops his arm.
And now you can all see why I write songs and not poetry.
Everyone's staring at him, questioning this poem, curious about his subject, but his eyes are still locked on mine, and that dim